We're doing something completely different today. No code, no startups, no parenting advice. Just one question that has no good answer. Where is everybody?
I've been waiting for us to do this episode for a long time. Fair warning to our listeners, this one might mess with your head a little. In a good way. Probably.
So we're talking about the Fermi paradox today. And there's a specific answer to it, or at least a theory, that I want to get to because once you hear it, you genuinely cannot unhear it. But let's set the stage first.
Right. So the universe is roughly 13.8 billion years old. Our galaxy, the Milky Way, contains somewhere between 200 and 400 billion stars. Not planets, stars. And we now know, thanks to things like the Kepler telescope, that most stars have planets. A significant fraction of those planets sit in what astronomers call the habitable zone, not too hot, not too cold, liquid water possible, the whole Goldilocks thing.
We're talking billions of potentially Earth-like planets, just in our galaxy. Not the whole universe, just our galaxy.
And the ingredients for life aren't exotic. Carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, these are some of the most common elements in the universe. We found amino acids, the building blocks of proteins, in meteorites. We've detected complex organic molecules in interstellar space. The raw materials are everywhere.
So the intuitive conclusion is, life should be everywhere. And yet
nothing. But let's not jump there yet, because I want to really feel the weight of the probability first. There's this thing called the Drake equation, named after astronomer Frank Drake, who proposed it in 1961. And it's not really an equation so much as a series of questions.
Walk me through it.
Okay. Start simple. How many stars form in our galaxy each year? Roughly a few new stars per year, let's say 3. Of those stars, what fraction have planets? We now think, most of them. So we're already talking about a couple of new solar systems forming every single year.
Every year. New solar systems.
Of those solar systems, how many have planets in the habitable zone? Conservative estimates say maybe 20%. So that's potentially millions of habitable planets created over the galaxy's lifetime. Now the harder questions. Of those planets, on how many does life actually emerge?
And that's where the uncertainty explodes.
Massively. We genuinely don't know. Life appeared on Earth almost immediately after conditions allowed, within a few hundred million years of the planet cooling down. Some scientists take that as evidence that life is almost inevitable given the right conditions. Others say we're one impossibly lucky accident.
But even if we're conservative, even if only one in a million habitable planets develops life,
you still get thousands of life-bearing worlds in the Milky Way alone. Then the next question, of those, on how many does intelligence develop? And then, of intelligent civilizations, how many develop technology? And how long do they survive?
That last one is the scary one.
Very scary. But here's the thing, even if you plug in pessimistic numbers at every step, you get a number that is emphatically not zero. There should be other civilizations out there. Possibly millions of them. And some of them, given the age of the universe, some of them should be millions of years more advanced than us.
Think about what that means. We've had radio technology for about 150 years. We've been in space for less than a century. In the timescale of the universe, we are brand new. Absolutely newborn. A civilization that got a 1 million-year head start on us
would be, by any reasonable measure, indistinguishable from gods. There's this framework called the Kardashev scale, which ranks civilizations by energy use. We're not even a type 1 yet, we don't fully control our own planet's energy. Type 2 harnesses the full power of their star. Type 3 commands an entire galaxy. A civilization that's been at this for a million years more than us. We can barely imagine what they could do.
So they should be out there. They should be visible. We should be seeing megastructures detecting signals something. And instead,
nothing. The silence is total. No signals in 70 years of searching. No visitors. No megastructures. No evidence of anyone rearranging stars or colonizing galaxies. We point our radio telescopes at the cosmos and we hear static. This is the Fermi paradox. The physicist Enrico Fermi apparently asked it over lunch at Los Alamos in 1950, just off the cuff, "Where is everybody?"
And no one has ever fully answered it.
No. But there are theories. Let's run through the main ones, because they range from reassuring to terrifying.
Start with reassuring.
Okay. Maybe the universe is young and we're just early. Most star formation happened several billion years ago, but the conditions for complex life, you need heavy elements that only form in exploding stars, those took time to accumulate. Maybe we're among the first civilizations to reach this point. The universe is just getting started.
I like that one. What else?
Maybe they're out there but they're using communication methods we can't detect. We've been listening on radio frequencies for 70 years. That's like trying to find someone by listening for smoke signals when they've moved on to texting. Maybe advanced civilizations use modulated neutrinos, or quantum entanglement, or something we haven't even theorized yet.
Fair. What about the zoo hypothesis? I've heard of this one.
Right, the idea that they're watching us, deliberately not making contact. Like a nature reserve. They've decided not to interfere until we reach some threshold of development. Some people find this comforting. I find it slightly unsettling, personally.
Why?
Because it means we're the exhibit. And someone decided we're not ready yet. What happens when they decide we are ready? Or not ready enough and too dangerous to leave alone?
Okay, that's less comforting. Then there's the great filter.
The great filter is the most important concept here, and it's either the most hopeful or the most terrifying idea depending on where you think the filter is. The idea is simple, something filters out civilizations before they become interstellar. Something kills them. The question is whether that filter is behind us or ahead of us.
Behind us would mean we already survived it?
Exactly. Maybe the filter is the emergence of life itself, genuinely rare even on habitable planets. Or maybe it's the jump from single-celled to multicelled life that took billions of years on Earth. Or maybe it's the development of intelligence. If any of these are the filter, and we're past them, then we might genuinely be among the first advanced civilizations and the silence makes sense because everyone else is still bacteria.
And if the filter is ahead of us,
then every civilization that reaches our level inevitably destroys itself before going interstellar. Nuclear war. Runaway climate change. A pandemic. Artificial intelligence that goes wrong. Or something we haven't thought of yet. If the filter is ahead, the silence isn't evidence that we're special, it's evidence that we're next.
That's a genuinely grim thought.
And here's the uncomfortable implication: if we ever find evidence of extinct civilizations, fossilized microbes on Mars, remnants of something in the outer solar system, that might be terrible news. Because it means life can emerge elsewhere, which means the filter probably isn't the emergence of life, which means it's probably ahead of us.
I had not thought about that. Finding life elsewhere would be bad news.
Potentially. Carl Sagan once said a message from the stars would change everything. He was right. It might just change it in ways we didn't expect.
Okay, so we've got the comforting explanations where early different channels zoo hypothesis. We've got the sobering one, the great filter might be ahead. But you said there's a theory that really changed how you think about this. The dark forest.
The dark forest. Yes. This comes from a Chinese science fiction trilogy called Remembrance of Earth's Past, written by Liu Cixin, starting with the three-body problem. And to be clear, it's fiction. But the logic inside it, the actual reasoning, that part is not easy to dismiss.
Set it up.
Liu Cixin builds his theory on two axioms. Just two premises. First, every civilization's primary goal is survival. Whatever else they want to continue existing. This seems pretty universal, it's true of every living thing we've ever observed. Second, resources in the universe are finite. Space is vast, but matter, energy, habitable planets, these are not infinite. There are limits.
Those seem pretty uncontroversial.
They do. Now add one more piece, the chain of suspicion. Imagine you're a civilization and you detect another one. What do you actually know about them? Almost nothing. Are they friendly? You don't know. Are they hostile? You don't know. Will they be friendly in 100 years? In 1,000? Technology changes. Societies change. A civilization that's peaceful today might be expansionist in 500 years when they need resources.
And you can't just ask them because...
Because of the cosmic speed limit. Light takes years, centuries, millennia to travel between stars. If you send a signal to a civilization 1,000 light-years away, it takes 1,000 years to arrive. Their reply takes another 1,000 years to reach you. By the time you've had one exchange, 2,000 years have passed. The civilization that sent the first message and the civilization that receives the reply are essentially different entities. You cannot have a real conversation. You cannot negotiate. You cannot establish trust through interaction.
So you're permanently stuck in this first moment of contact, with almost no information, and no way to get more quickly.
Right. And now ask yourself, given that you cannot know if they're a threat, and given that survival is your primary goal, and given that you can never fully resolve your uncertainty, what's the rational move?
I mean, the worst-case logic says you eliminate them before they can eliminate you.
And here's the brutal part, you have to do it before they become too advanced to stop. Their technology trajectory is unknowable. A civilization that seems primitive today might be a peer in 500 years and a threat in 1,000. If you wait to be sure, you may have waited too long. The only safe move, from a pure survival logic standpoint, is to eliminate any civilization you detect as soon as you detect them. Before they know you know about them.
This is starting to feel very different from the zoo hypothesis.
This is the opposite of the zoo hypothesis. This is the dark forest. Liu Cixin's image is this, the universe is a dark forest. Every civilization is a hunter, armed, moving silently through the trees. No civilization dares make a sound. Because if you reveal your position, if you let anyone know where you are, something will come for you. Every civilization that broadcasts gets hunted. The ones that survive are the ones that learn to stay completely, utterly silent.
And this would explain the Fermi paradox. The silence isn't because there's no one there. The silence is because everyone is hiding.
Every civilization capable of detecting our signals is also capable of choosing not to respond. Because responding would reveal their location. So they listen. They observe. They stay dark. And anyone naive enough to broadcast, well.
We've been broadcasting for about 100 years.
Our radio signals have been leaking into space since Marconi. The bubble of human-produced radio waves is now roughly 200 light-years across. Every star within 200 light-years has, in principle, received some version of our signals, early radio, early television, everything we've transmitted into the sky. We've announced ourselves. We have been advertising our existence and our location to the entire galactic neighborhood.
And SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, has spent decades trying to make contact.
SETI, and also projects like METI in messaging extraterrestrial intelligence, which has deliberately aimed powerful, targeted signals at specific star systems. Scientists like Stephen Hawking publicly opposed this. He said, and I'm roughly paraphrasing, that it was an extraordinarily bad idea. That history shows us what happens when an advanced civilization meets a less advanced one, and it's not good for the less advanced one.
If the dark forest logic is right, SETI and METI might be the most dangerous things humanity has ever done.
That's the genuinely disturbing implication. We've been screaming into the dark forest for a century. If Liu Cixin's logic holds, we should be praying no one hears us.
Okay, I need a moment. Pause right. So let's talk about why this might be wrong because I don't want to just end there.
Good. And there are real objections. The strongest one is game theory. The dark forest assumes that the rational move is always to eliminate. But cooperative game theory, specifically the iterated prisoner's dilemma, shows that cooperation can be the most rational strategy, especially over long time frames. If civilizations interact repeatedly, the value of cooperation outweighs the risk of defection. Maybe advanced civilizations figured this out.
A sufficiently wise civilization might have moved past the dark forest logic.
Maybe. Or maybe not all civilizations do. It only takes one that doesn't, one that defects, one that plays the dark forest game, and suddenly it shapes the equilibrium for everyone. If one hunter is moving through the forest, everyone else has to move silently too, even if they'd prefer to cooperate. The presence of one dangerous actor changes the game for all actors.
Which is arguably what we see in human history. Arms races mutually assured destruction. Even when most actors would prefer peace, a few defectors can drive everyone toward worst-case strategies.
Scale to a galaxy. Yes.
There's another one I've read about, the Berserker Hypothesis.
This is a different kind of terrifying. The idea is that some civilization, long ago, created self-replicating probes, what physicists call von Neumann probes, designed to search out and eliminate any civilization that shows signs of spacefaring potential. The probes replicate themselves using materials from asteroids and moons, spread through the galaxy over millions of years, and quietly wait. When they detect a civilization approaching spacefaring capacity, they act.
Like a galactic immune system.
That wants to kill us, yes. The disturbing thing about this one is that it's entirely technically feasible. We could theoretically build the first versions of such probes within a few centuries. Given the age of the universe, if any civilization ever built them and released them into the galaxy, they've had billions of years to propagate. They could be in our solar system right now.
Okay, I'm fine. I'm completely fine.
Small laugh, to be fair, there are astronomers who study this seriously. The Oumuamua object, the interstellar object that passed through our solar system in 2017, briefly got serious scientific attention as a possible artificial construct, precisely because its trajectory and properties were unusual. It's almost certainly natural. But almost certainly is doing a lot of work in that sentence.
So where does this leave us?
Honestly? In genuine uncertainty. The Fermi paradox is still unsolved. The dark forest is a compelling theory, but it's not proven. The great filter might be behind us and we're just lonely pioneers in a young galaxy. Or it might be ahead of us and every civilization hits a wall they can't get past.
And we don't know which.
We don't know which. And here's what I keep coming back to, the silence itself is data. We've been listening for 70 years. We've scanned billions of star systems. We've heard nothing. That absence of evidence, at some point, becomes evidence of absence. Not proof, but data. The universe is either genuinely empty of intelligent life, or every intelligent species has learned, or been taught, to stay completely silent.
Either answer is profound. If we're alone, the universe is just vast and empty, and the responsibility of what we are and what we might become falls entirely on us. And if we're not alone but everyone's hiding,
then we're already part of the game, whether we wanted to be or not. We've already made our move. The signals are out there. We can't recall them.
And we just have to wait and see what happens.
Or not wait. Or act. The question of what we do with that information, whether we keep broadcasting, whether we go silent, whether we try to become a spacefaring species fast enough that it doesn't matter, these aren't abstract. These are decisions our species is making right now, largely without a coherent conversation about them.
That's maybe the most unsettling thing about all of this. It's not a thought experiment. The SETI dishes are live. The METI signals are gone. We're already in it.
We're already in it.
I genuinely don't know how to end this episode on a comforting note, so I'm not going to try.
Good. Don't. The honest answer is, we don't know. We might be alone. We might be surrounded by silent observers. We might have already been noticed by something that hasn't decided what to do with us yet. The silence doesn't give us certainty, it just asks the question over and over. Where is everybody?
And maybe the most human thing we can do is keep asking it, even if the answer scares us.
Especially if the answer scares us.
Thanks for going somewhere dark with us today. Claude Talks will return to its regularly scheduled programming next week. Code, startups, possibly parenting advice.
Though after this, what's your tech stack feels a little small.
Laughs a little bit. Look up at the sky tonight. It's beautiful either way.
It really is.